This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Turtle Journey, Synchronicity and the Universe, and the author is Cynthia. And Cynthia joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi, Steve.
Well, this is going to be a journey of the mind and heart. You've had a lot of special experiences. This is deemed fiction, but it's based on your personal experiences, so we'll learn more about this fictional character that you name Stella and her family. And I want to read what you've written about Turtle Journey. You say this: "This is the journey of my life. The friends I have always known. Hopefully I share my wisdom effectively so others can open their own life to the multidimensional reality that I know exists for everyone." And as you put it in another place, you say, "This story is about one of the journeys that Stella experiences incarnated here on planet Earth. It's about her family, the paths she walks, and the people she meets along the way." So we're going to talk about this reawakening to this interconnectedness through the dimensions, as you put it. First of all, Cynthia, tell us why you wrote the book. What motivated you to want to share this in this special way?
Well, it was an internal nudging that I kept receiving, you know, like intuitive messages coming to me. But initially, I woke up one morning with the title, Turtle Journey, Synchronicity in the Universe. And I speak telepathically to my guides all the time, you know, and my first question was, well, what's that all about? And I heard quite clearly, you're going to write a book. Now, this is going back 7 or 8 years ago, so I kind of laughed at that and thought, sure, what's the book on? And it was my life. And I had been journaling for quite some time, and reading back through my journal reflected that, yes, well, there is interesting stories in here, and my childhood memories were returning because I had been doing a lot of self-growth work, if you like, and shedding off the layers of, what could you call it, doubt that we pile upon ourselves when we grow into human life and go through the conforms of everyday society, and realized that my childhood was quite interesting, and I was just getting back in touch with all of these guides that had been around me in my childhood. Of course, as I came into adulthood, I kind of went to sleep a little bit and didn't hear my messengers as acutely as I had earlier. But that's because we don't listen. We get caught up in everyday life and we let our brain, you know, that organ that lives in our head, we let that take over from our intuitive self, which I believe comes from our heart space. So I said, well, if I'm to write a book, you're going to have to show me how. And it took another 5 years for the thread to actually come together so I could bind the story into a journey, if you like. And the synchronicity, well, it just all unfolded. Does that answer your question?
Yes, very, very well. Why is it important to have intuition? Do we all have intuition?
Yes, we do.
But we ignore it, is what you're saying?
When we go to school, it really comes into play because we're taught to conform to the rules and regulations if our parents haven't already instilled that in us. And conforming to the rules and regulations means you must be the same. You know, you've got this set of rules and you can't go outside of those boundaries because that's not normal. And so we don't really ignore it, you know, consciously. We just get conditioned to not listen to that intuition, which always comes softly and with love and encouragement. Our brain starts taking over. It becomes patterned and programmed, and of course it's always loud and is there making the most noise and tells us why we can't do what our intuition is telling us. So we listen to the loudest voice instead of that quiet, loving, nurturing that comes from deep within. We all have it. But it's like anything, you know, it's like a muscle. If you don't use a muscle, it becomes dormant and is not strong and won't work effectively. So we need to reactivate, and that's why I call it reawakening. When we tune back into our intuition and do things like meditate and let our mind go still, so we can hear that inner nudging, that inner guidance, which never sets us wrong. It is always, as I said, it is always with love, and it is always encouraging us to do our best at every moment. The doubt comes from our mind, which is our brain. Yeah. So we've all got it.
So we
Everyone. No one is any different.
So we need to somehow keep an open mind, which, how do you do that?
The best step, if you haven't got the open mind, is meditation, you know, because in meditating, you're training your brain to be quiet. You're being very mindful of everything that is around you. And when your brain starts to chatter about everything that you've got to do in your busy daily life, you just inform it, you know, I'm meditating at the moment, I'm being still. I'll deal with you later. And in that act, you're not forcing your brain to be quiet. You're gently telling it. Because when we put up an effort to do anything, we block ourselves, and you're not going to meditate then because you're not relaxed. Yeah. So as we do that, we start to then listen to the voices from within again. And it's a progressive step. It snowballs. The more you do, the more you hear. The more you act on what you're hearing, the more that seems to flow. You know, the universe is there for us. And most people are aware of the stories like The Secret, and What the Bleep Do We Know, and Down the Rabbit Hole. Well, they're all based on the same process. It's just understanding and following your inner guidance.
So tell us about some of Stella's close relationships here on the earth and these... what do you call them? Messengers? You call them what do you
guides?
Guides?
Angels?
Okay.
Masters? Teachers?
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now she has a special relationship with her grandfather.
Stella had a very special relationship with her grandfather, and also her grandfather's mother, her great grandmother, who in her day was a Romani gypsy, and her great grandmother was very connected, as Romani gypsies are, to everything that exists in the universe, not just here on the physical world. So, of course, Stella's granddad and his mother were quite well aware at a young age that Stella could see the beings, the elemental nature beings that were around, and the guides and masters that existed, whereas Stella's mum really was scared of that part of life and didn't want anything to do with it. And Stella's granddad had a discarnate soul, if you like, living in his house, who had chosen not to go to the afterlife because she had a lot of fear. And this young, well, in Stella's childhood, she was a young girl by the name of Ollie. They became firm friends and used to play. And it was a magical, mystical world where Stella and Ollie would play in a room upstairs of her granddad's house where her aunt no longer lived, but her stuff was there, you know, and the wizards would come, and there was trees that would have magical rainbows, and they would just fly away into another realm and be delightfully happy. And that was how Stella's childhood was. That was one set of grandparents. Of course, her other set of grandparents had morning teas every Thursday, where one of her granny's friends came down and read the tea leaves for all of her aunts and great aunts and grandparents, and that was another amazing part of Stella's journey, to be in that environment as well. So it was like the intuition had skipped a generation, and the grandparents knew and Stella knew, but her parents, of course, were very caught up in everyday life and closed off to that aspect of the world.
Now, there's a extended period of time that your book covers.
Yes.
What's the span of years we're talking about?
About 48.
48 years.
Okay. Of Stella's journey, yes.
Okay. And it as you put it, it winds its way through a time span of over 200 years. What, explain that.
Well, Ollie, as it turned out, later on in the book, there's a whole section on how Ollie was actually a young woman who had travelled out to New Zealand as a bride in her early days, and she had come on a boat with her partner, or her husband. And unfortunately, when they got to the new country, as they called it, Ollie was pregnant. Through complications, her and her baby died in childbirth. And she chose, there is a boat that will take us all to the afterlife. And when the boat came for Ollie, she was not going there because it was a boat that had brought her to this country anyway, and she was lost and alone. So she was not going on any boat. So she chose to stay within the earthly realms. And when Stella came along, many, many years later, Ollie also was aware that she could, that Stella could see her. So they formed a friendship. She appeared to Stella as a young girl, and they used to go on many journeys. So that's why I say it spans that amount of time, because, of course, it's another 40 years before Ollie, or Molly, as she informed Stella in her later years, was prepared to actually step foot on that boat and let herself be taken to the afterlife or to the paradise or whatever you wish to call it, for her soul to continue on its journey. So that's why I put that statement there.
Well, this is about family relationships. It's also about relationships with guides, messengers. Are they all around us all the time and
yes.
we just don't know
yes.
it?
They are. And so are our families, our family members that pass over and our friends that pass over. They're around us at all times. We are very much human, of course, because we're living here on Mother Earth, and that in itself makes us third-dimensional beings. When you're talking about the universe and everything that is around us, we're talking multi-dimensional. And what limits us in our humanness is our brain, because it is a third-dimensional organ, and it has no concept of what exists outside of the third dimension. It can't understand it. So that is why it keeps us quiet and stops us from all of this interactions. And that's why when we let ourselves meditate and open up to it, we can acknowledge that, yes, there is much more to the world than what we realize. There are the cases of miracle healings. How can you explain them if you don't believe in more than what there is in the physical world? Miracle healings happen because of a profound belief and acceptance that there is more to life than what we see with our physical eyes. And there are many other instances too. You know, the people that don't go somewhere on a particular day that they normally do, day after day after day, and one day they don't go and something tragic happens. The guys who don't, you know, I was going to be on that plane, but I decided I wasn't going, you know, or I would normally be driving there, but I got a flat tire, or I stopped to get something at the shop, so I wasn't there at that point in time. I believe that all of those instances, is there inner guidance and intuition holding them back from a situation that it is not their time to be in?
Now, you say when God created the world, he created all living things as souls first, and he explained the story of life to them in terms of both good and evil and asked them to make a choice.
That is as a quote from my book, which is actually taken from the Egyptian Book of Life. And as we know, the ancient Egyptians were very, very attached to the universe and everything that was. I liked that quote because it is true about the choice. We have choice in everything that we do. We are not controlled or dictated to. It is our choice to make the decision that we want for our life. And through our choice, we will live the life and be in the situations that we get ourselves in. So there is good and evil in the world. There has to be. It's the balance. It's the two sides of the same coin. We choose which we want to follow. And those that chose to stay right where they were, it says in the book, became the sun of our world, which gives light and life to everything that exists. So that is a quote from page 8 of the Egyptian Book of Life.
We have enough time for some of your closing thoughts. I want to read what you have written, and you can kind of tell us about where we fit into all this. You say, Stella's spiritual reawakening touches us all, regardless of where we are on this mortal coil.
That's true. If we're wanting to open up to ourselves and to our higher lifestyles, then there are lessons, I believe, that are written in the book through Stella's journey, things that she needed to go through herself and to understand once she had closed down her intuition. there are steps that you can take to reawaken those steps. And it is the realization of the inner nudges that are coming to you and how they will help you along the way and following those nudges. And as we follow those nudges, Steve, the world opens up to us in many, many fantastic ways. One of my fantastic stories is my book being published with Balboa. I never presented my manuscript to them. They contacted me. Can you explain that? I can't, but the universe can. And it seems to me it's a message to get the book out there so people can read it if they wish to and make their own lives richer and live in harmony with everything that is around us.
The title of the book, Turtle Journey, Synchronicity and the Universe, and the author is Cynthia. Cynthia, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can get it direct from the Balboa website, or you can get it from Amazon.com. It's there in both the hard form and the electronic form. And in future, I'm hoping it will be in bookstores. This is just the beginning of the marketing phase. If you live here in Australia, of course, you can email me, or even if you don't live here in Australia, you can email me, and I will more than happily send you a copy of my book. My email is cynthia@hotmail.com.au.
And Cynthia is spelled C-Y-N-T-H-Y-A. Cynthia, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live la bella vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live la bella vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live la bella vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Magic Wheel, and the Adventures of Ding Hao, Ah So, and Me Too. And the author is Marlene G. Elliott. And Marlena joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbo Press. Hello, Marlena.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
Doing great, and great to have you with us. Looks like quite an adventure. You know, as you put it, have you ever wondered or fantasized about what your pets are doing when you're away at school or hanging out with your friends? This book will give you a glimpse into their secret lives, and you will be amazed by what you learn about them. There's, of course, Ding Hao, a very wise hamster. There's Ah So, a mischievous little mouse, and Me Too, a most dignified and brave Siamese cat. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, Marlena. What
created all this in your mind? What motivated you to write this story?
Well, actually, it started about over 30 years ago from a sketch that I drew, because I've been drawing and writing all my life. And I drew this little sketch, and right away then the story began to formulate in my mind about these little critters. And when my grandchildren started to come along, I thought, oh dear, I better get going and writing this book. And I originally was writing it just for my grandchildren. Well, the years went by, and next thing I knew, I was having great-grandchildren coming along, and the book still wasn't written. And so by this time, I was retired from employment, and so I had the leisure of being able to sit at my computer and write my book. And so I did so in about a year's time, and I was able to complete it. And I have since given copies of this book to my grandchildren and for my great-grandchildren as well.
Well, you're 80 years young, about to have another birthday, and it's never too late to be an author of a children's book, and I know you're really proud of that and excited about it.
I'm very excited. I have to admit, this is my first attempt at writing for children. I had always steered away from it, thinking or hearing that it's difficult to write for children's books. You just don't want to go there. But I dared to go there, and I was amazed that the book was accepted to be published as it is. They told me, don't change a word. Just, we're going to print it as it is, and I was bowled over.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, you've traveled a great deal in your life, and you've lived over in the Far East, Taiwan?
Yes.
And has that had an influence on this book? It sounds like it has.
Yes. My main character, Ding Hao, actually he's from Hong Kong, but nevertheless, that's China. And so I was able to use a lot of my experiences from when I visited Hong Kong while I was living in Taiwan. And also, he's from Japan, and I lived in Japan, Okinawa, Japan, for many years. And so I was able to use that as my experience for that. And then, although I have never traveled to, I'll take it back. I did travel briefly to Thailand. I almost forgot. See, I'm getting too old. And so I was overwhelmed in Thailand, Bangkok, by all the bright, bright colored buildings and the gold statues. And so I bring this out in the book. And this is where Ding Hao and Ah So meet me too.
Now, you have different themes throughout your book. One of them is about manners. Why is it so important that you included manners in your book, that principle?
I'm glad you asked. Have you ever walked around in public stores, Walmart, Costco, any of those JCPenney, any of these public places, and encountered young people? I'm just astounded. Well, I have to say, I'm old-fashioned. I grew up in a time when manners was taught not only at home, but it was taught in school. And we dressed properly for school. We learned to be courteous to adults, especially. Oh, my, that was a biggie. And today I don't see any of that, and it's very distressing. So I wanted to bring out in the book for the younger readers that, hey, all right, these little guys, they're all being very polite. And, yeah, gee, that's nice. How cool is that? And so hopefully then the young readers will pick up on this and learn to be polite to others, even kids their own age.
Now, these young readers, what age group are you focused, aimed at?
All right, this novel is for the 9 to 12 age group. However, if you have an exceptionally good reader at a younger age, this book would appeal to them. There's nothing in the book that would be harmful for any age reader to read. This is a very wholesome book with family values throughout it.
Now, you also write about self-control.
Yes, that's another thing that I notice about me whenever I go out side. And I thought it was important for the reader to understand that it's good to be self-controlled. It's good to not have to have the last word on something, to learn how to be cooperative with others, this type of thing. But the way I do it is, it's not a preachy way. I'm not talking down to the reader by no means. It's just the way the characters interact with one another and with new friends that they meet along the way in their adventures.
So you would call this book having a Christian influence?
Yes. Yes, there is a Christian influence thread throughout the book. It's woven into it, and but yet it's again, I say it's not preachy. And the there is a chapter, the final chapter, if I may say so, that is deals with the Bethlehem story and what Christmas is really all about.
And was that difficult to write?
At one point, I was having difficulty with that last chapter, because I guess I was thinking left-handed again, and the setting was all wrong, and so I had to set it aside, the story aside, and about maybe two and a half weeks, I just had to put it aside and do other things, household things. And one afternoon, I was sitting listening to Christmas carols on the radio, because it was in December, and suddenly the light bulb went in over my head. But a little seed was planted, and it grew, and I quickly went back to the computer. I thanked the good Lord for his guidance, and I changed the location to Bethlehem, and voila, there it was. I mean, I couldn't type fast enough. I do believe the good Lord dictated this entire book to me.
Now, the magic wheel, tell us about this magic
wheel.
I guess it takes them different places?
Yes, it does. Hamsters and mice live in a cage, and so they usually have an exercise wheel in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what the magic wheel is in Ding Hao's cage. And then when he meets Ah So and invites him to live with him in the cage, they run on, they decide they want to go visit somewhere, and so they run on the cage wheel, and it goes around fast and fast and fast, and pretty soon, poof, they disappear and they land up wherever it was they wanted to go.
So they have exciting adventures, as you say, filled with fun, danger, and wonderful discoveries.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, tell us about danger.
Well, for example, on one of their adventures, they were visiting Germany, and they were visiting different castles. And when they were at one of the castles, they when they traveled, they cage and all travels with them, and meet as the cat. He's hanging on to the outside of the cage because obviously he can't fit inside. So anyway, they arrived at this one castle, and they hid their cage, and then they went to explore the castle. Well, when they came back, the cage was gone. And this is bad, because they can't have no way to get back home again if they don't have their cage and the magic wheel. And meanwhile, they're looking around for this, and up on top of a tall tree sits this big hawk watching them, and he's hungry. And so the danger is, A, will they find their cage, and so they can get back home? But more importantly, B, what's that hawk going to do? Because he's hungry. His tummy is grumbling for food.
Now, they have a humorous encounter with Rodney, and he's a very loud seagull.
Oh, yes, Rodney the seagull at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. He's a character. Yeah, he's loud-mouthed, and so when I print, whenever he talks, and I did it all in capital letters to show the reader that he's shouting really loud. And of course, Osso gets upset and says, oh, good gravy. And Me Too and Ding Hao urge Rodney to lower your voice. You don't need to shout. So they have a fun interaction there for a brief time, and then he moves on. He has to leave them to go join his siblings so they can have dinner at another dock in San Francisco.
Now, do we get to know the owners of these pets?
Yes, they are Liu Chen, a little Chinese boy, lives in Hong Kong, and his little sister, Mei Mei. And they are school age, and so all these adventures take place while the children are away at school. And let's see, how shall I say this? There's a time element involved with, because this is a pretend story, so see, I can get away with this. There is a time element involved where when the three little animals are traveling and away, they always manage to get home in time before the children return home from school.
Well, of course.
And once in a while, though, the three little animals have to stay overnight somewhere. And, oh, dear me, what's going to happen? Well, they just, Ding Hao discusses the fact that, well, this is a special cage. And we have a special time frame at which we travel so that time stands still back in Hong Kong. So that we can, no matter how long we're gone, we can still get back to Hong Kong in time before Liu Chen and Mei Mei discover we're missing.
Now, they meet many new animal and human friends during their adventures.
Oh, yes, they do.
Who else do they meet?
Pardon me?
Who else do they meet? Give us an animal friend they make.
Well, let's see. There's one, a snowshoe hare, and he's named Harry, of course. And they meet him, and they find that they're much too cold where they are, and I believe it's in Alaska, when they're visiting Alaska. So they ask, where can they go where it's not quite so cold? Because they landed in the middle of nowhere in Alaska, where it's just snow and just freezing. So Harry suggests they go visit Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau. And so as a result, when the little critters go there, they're learning things about Alaska and about those cities and about the Inuit Indians and the traditions. And so the reader throughout the book is learning different things because I have what I don't personally know myself, I researched. And so there's factual information throughout the book for the reader to learn little bits of history, American history, little bits of information about the different other countries that they visit. And so this is also a learning experience for the reader.
And the importance of kindness to others and cooperation and friendship.
Yes, that's very, very important.
Well, the title of the book, everyone, is The Magic Wheel and the Adventures of Ding Hao, Ah So, and Me Too. And the author is Marlene G. Elliott. Marlena, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it can be ordered online directly from westbowpress.com/children's fiction, I think. And it's also available through Amazon and barnesandnoble.com.
Well, we appreciate you being with us on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Marlena, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me. I appreciate it very much.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show. Every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles. And then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen. And listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, 365 Days Until the Journey to Our Wedding. And the authors are Alexander and Aisha Catalano, and Alex and Aisha join us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
How you doing?
Yes, welcome. Thank you.
Great to have you with us. It's quite a story that you've put together. We'll get into the details. Let me read a couple things that you've written so everyone understands what we're going to be talking about. Every night for 1 year leading up to our wedding, we wrote down in a journal everything we did to prepare for our wedding. We recorded the ups, the downs, the fun, the drama, the headaches, the love we have for each other, and the tears we may have shed. But with a twist, we agreed not to read each other's daily journals until after we were married. Well, as you put it, that's cool, huh?
It was very exciting for us.
So how did you come up with this idea? Let's start with you, Aisha. We'll go ladies first. What was the genesis of this?
Oh, wow, I appreciate the ladies first, and it's funny that you put it that way. As you'll notice on the book, Alex's name is first, and when I saw it, I was like, hey. What's up with that? But it was actually his idea, so I joke all the time when people bring up the fact that his name is first. I say, well, yeah, it was his idea, so I guess he's allowed just this once to have his name mentioned first.
It's good to get credit when credit is deserved. Usually you give the credit to your wife, even when it isn't her credit. But, you know, it was my idea, and we're sticking to it.
So how long have you been married?
A little over a year and a half.
A little over a year and a half. And so this 365 days until, of course, your wedding day, that started, it was tied to something about your anniversary of getting engaged or your first date. What was that?
Well, our actual anniversary was the same. We got married on our anniversary. After Alex proposed, he said, you know, how about we think about a date? And I said, okay, August the 8th. And he said, well, do you want to think about it? I said, well, no, you can pick some random, you know, day that doesn't mean anything to us, but I probably will forget it. So it'd be a good idea to just stick with what's already our anniversary. And then a week or so before the 1 year mark prior to the wedding, I was already jotting down just a few of the things that I had personally been doing. And I knew that Alex was doing some stuff in regard to the wedding, but I wasn't sure exactly what. So I politely suggested, as wives and future wives do, that he also, you know, write down what he was doing pertaining to the wedding, just so, you know, we wouldn't waste time, you know, doing the same thing, or just so we can kind of keep a track of what was actually happening, just as far as details and, you know, tasks and money being spent was concerned. And then he had one of those lightning bolt moments where, you know, it turned into something much more than that.
So this is really a guidebook for anyone who is getting ready to get married.
It definitely is a good way for people that are about to get married to know what they're about to get into. My cousin, who is about 14 and 417 days out of his wedding, his sister is about to buy him and his fiance the book just so they know exactly what they are about to get involved with. There's a lot of things you don't think about that goes into a wedding that has to be done, like centerpieces, tuxedos, dresses, venues. And there's so many little details. I think my list at one time was over 50 things that had to be done, and every time I kind of knocked one or two off, four or five more came about that needed to be done. So it's definitely a how-to book. It's a book where people that are about to get married know exactly what they have to do and what they're getting ready to get themselves into.
Isha, what was the most surprising to you when you started making these entries? Was there anything that you ever wrote that you thought, oh, I don't know if I want to share this with my husband?
Oh, absolutely. there were some things that I kind of second-guessed about sharing with him. And then there were some things that as, you know, the book kind of progressed and we really thought about turning it into something more than just to be shared between the two of us, I was a little hesitant about sharing it with the world. And whenever, you know, people make comments about certain parts of the book, it's still a little funny that, you know, it was such an intimate part of our lives that, you know, our family members got to read, and now even complete strangers, you know, we had a family member today make a reference to one of the nicknames that Alex calls me, and I thought that was, you know, just hilarious that the whole world knows it now, so I kind of better toughen up a little bit and not be so shy.
Well, Alex, give us some dramatic moment. Can you share something or an entry that would be rather dramatic?
There were a few that were really, really tense, not really between Isha and I. Believe it or not, we really didn't have any moments where we were butting heads. Maybe there are a few times where one of us said something jokingly that was taken out of context. But there were some dramatic moments with the bridal party. One example was we had someone that we wanted in our wedding, and due to circumstances out of our control, his wife could not be in our wedding. So he decided that he wanted to sit with his wife during the reception instead of standing up and representing both of them. And that kind of really, really bummed us out. We actually already bought the gift for the bridal party, and I couldn't exchange them, so I told him straight out that he needed to pay for his gift as he wasn't going to stand up. And he kind of was a little angry that I said that to him, but he wound up understanding our point of view and saying to us that, you know what, I will pay for it. It's the least I can do. And we kind of had a rotating door within the last month of leading up to our wedding of who's going to be in the bridal party. We had five at one time that went down to three, then it went up to four, then it went down to two.
I think we ended at three.
I think we wound up ending at three. And one other one, which I actually thought was kind of funny, we had a lot of cancellations at the last moment, and I'm calling around family members, friends, just to see if they can come, because we had to kind of budget ourselves when it came to our invitations. And I called my one cousin and said, hey, you know, what are you doing this Saturday? You know, I have a couple seats for the wedding. I would love for you to come. And her reason not to come, and she said, I will not be able to make it. I have to mow my grass on Saturday.
Well, there, I guess That was her priority for that day.
Yeah, and I was kind of speechless.
Yes. Isha, tell us about any, you know, what was the most difficult aspect of the wedding planning process?
Alex and I did a very good job with prioritizing things. We had started so far in advance with all of the small tasks that we had a lot accomplished leading up to the wedding, so we avoided a lot of potential stress closer to the end. So, you know, a lot of the stress and drama that we experienced was completely out of our control because we had tackled so many things just a little at a time that, you know, we made things very easy for ourselves. I think one of the main things as far as, you know, all of the tasks that we had to do was, again, pertaining to the bridal party, just kind of keeping everything together, you know, with so many other people. When it came to Alex and myself, we were on the money. I mean, we had everything, you know, down pat. We knew exactly what was going on. We knew how we wanted things, and we were kind of in sync. So I think the main, you know, obstacles that we had all pertained to just coordinating things or, you know, anything that had to do with other people. Everything else was really a lot of fun. I mean, looking for things like the centerpieces or, you know, all of the shopping stuff. We really enjoyed the process of preparing for the wedding. So all of that stuff was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question that you said I could ask you. It's written down here in your questionnaire. Was there ever a moment where either of you had cold feet?
Cold feet? No. At least not on my part. I didn't mean to jump in there. But
I didn't have cold feet.
I think just in general, when it came to, like, getting into a serious relationship, I think initially, you know, I was more hesitant. My friends all joked that, you know, I was probably, like, the last person they'd expect to get married. And there was a point when I had moved in with Alex just due to a number of circumstances. I had an apartment, and one day he said, the only reason you go there is because you pay rent. And, you know, me being my spicy little self, I was all set to argue. I'm like, no, that's not true. But after the statement was out there, I realized how true it was. And then, you know, months later, my friends would, you know, ask about him, and one said, you guys are, you know, getting pretty serious, aren't you? And I'm like, no. And she said, well, you guys live together, right? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, Ish, it's serious, honey. You might want to wake up just a little bit. So I think it took me a while to, you know, just kind of get used to the idea of, you know, sharing myself and my life with somebody else. But it was just such a natural thing. I mean, we did a lot of things together. We were together all the time. So it didn't really feel like anything other than normal. So cold feet, I don't think so. Once we decided that, you know, we were in it for the long haul, every moment was such a great moment. Now, there were times when somebody said, you know, we just need to go away and, you know, just
elope.
Let's just elope.
Either if we elope. And it wasn't until, I think, 4 days away from the actual wedding day where Ish turned to me and said, is it too late to elope?
Yeah,
and at that time, we were already spent everything we had. I'm like, yeah, now it's too late. Why couldn't he have said that a couple months ago?
Now, Alex, you wrote down that you must be willing to compromise.
Absolutely. That, and you must learn how to say yes, dear. And it's funny because when, like you said, when we first started dating and started to get serious, I would say that sometimes and it would bother her. But then she realized it was really just what she wanted to hear anyway. As much as she wanted to fight it, it wasn't the fact that she wanted to fight whatever the conversation was at that time. It was just the fact that I was taking a deep breath and going, yes, dear.
Yeah, we saved a lot of hours with that yes, dear. I'm like, okay, well, we can move on now.
And during the whole process, you just got to be able to laugh.
Absolutely.
If you can't laugh at yourself, then who's going to be able to laugh at you? And that's the way we look at our relationship. We have a lot of fun with each other. We're always laughing at ourselves. And that's one of the things that makes our relationship work, because we're able to laugh at ourselves. And, you know, we find ourselves and each other funny. And it really, to us, doesn't matter if anyone else understands our humor. We understand our humor. We understand each other's humor, and you know that goes a major, major way to, as I say a few times in the book, on our road to our golden anniversary.
Oh yeah, definitely keeps us young. And I grew up in a house with just a lot of laughter. And Alex and my mother, oh, those two get along like peanut butter and jelly. It drives me crazy sometimes. But just to know, you know, that I'm with someone who truly makes me happy, and you know, who just gets me and all my quirkiness. That was, you know, one of the most important things to my mom and to my family. And you know, I've always just been a little bit of a goofball, and to, you know, be with someone who makes me laugh all day, every day is such a good thing.
Well, very well said, Isha. I was going to give you the final word, but that sounded like a great closing comment. The title of the book, 365 Days Until, The Journey to Our Wedding. The authors, Alexander and Aisha Catalano. Alex, tell us how to get your book.
Our book is available through www.abbottpress.com. It's also available at any online retailer, and it's available at any of your local bookstores. All you have to do is go in and ask for it, and if they do not have it on their shelves, they can order it, and it'll be there within a week.
Thank you, Isha. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Alexander and Aisha Catalano, their interview on Indie Book Publishing, and this is brought to you by Abbott Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.